Welcome to Just Now Possible with Teresa Torres.
Hi, I'm Claire. I am an AI engineer at Zelix, and I work on our help desk products, and I help develop generate responses.
My name is Amelia. I'm a backend tech lead for help desk. So what that entails is I work on the backend of the project and also just help guide the development team to make sure that our development goals align with our product goals.
And I'm Talal. I'm the product manager for Help Desk at Zelix. I work on everything from product strategy to feature development and deployment.
All right. And tell me a little bit about Zelix before we get into your Help Desk product.
So Zelix is an account. We bill ourselves as an accounts payable control center. We have a range of accounts payable technology products that leverage AI. One of them is transactions. We try to find errors in accounting through that. Statements where we allow statements to be reconciled. And then finally, Help Desk, which we're going to go over today, which is our newest product and our AI-enabled AP-specific ticketing system.
Okay. And then I'm going to break this down just because we probably have listeners that are not familiar with the finance world. So accounts payable teams are the teams at a company that's basically responsible for paying the bills. Is that a good way to think about it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So think of your company and you want to buy a bunch of things. So the accounts payable team will purchase them and then vendors will chase them for money, send them bills and that sort of thing.
Okay. And then the product we're going to talk through today is a help desk product. Maybe give me a little bit of context, like for your customer, I'm on an accounts payable team. Tell me a little bit about what is that accounts payable person's life like so that we have context for where your product fits in.
Yeah, the product we're working on right now or talking about is the help desk product. That is used directly by these AP teams within the finance office. And it's used primarily to communicate with vendors or suppliers, depending on the language you use. And these suppliers will usually reach out to these organizations with various requests, and then our system will support them in responding to it.
Okay. And so I have experience with this as a small business. I'm often talking with accounts payable teams to try to get my invoices paid on time. So this is very relatable to me. For people that are listening that haven't been involved in this function in their business, there's often a lot of back and forth around, first of all, I have to send an invoice. It has to comply with the company's requirements. Then the company needs things like here in the US, we have documentation like W-9s that need to be collected before a payment can be sent. I don't know what the equivalent is in Europe. And then there's a back and forth of like payment details that need to be collected. Maybe there's a vendor set up in like a third party vendor tool. Is that kind of the stuff that's going back and forth through this help desk?
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Okay. Perfect. And then, so it sounds like a lot, like the problem your product is designed to solve is you've got these accounts payable teams that are busy. They're getting a lot of incoming messages that could be related to payments, like needing to pay something. And the goal is just to help alleviate some of that load.
Yeah, these teams get sometimes like over 1,000 emails a day, depending on the size of the organization. And they're inundated with these messages. They don't really have a structure to them or anything like that. And vendors might be sending the same message multiple times. There are different categories of requests, but they range of what type of the request could be. And it does take a long time for these professionals to respond to each message that comes in. So that our platform does support them in giving them the right answer that they need when they need it to cut down on that handling time.
I'm curious about your process for thinking about, like, why is this an area that AI could help?
The most interesting thing that we could do with Help Desk is basically bringing in our expertise from other sectors of Zelix. Like Talal mentioned, we have a transactions module that handles invoices, and it means that we can link to our customers' ERP databases, which is like their financial database. It holds all their invoices. So what we try to do with Help Desk is when our customers get these requests from vendors asking, where's my payments? I sent this invoice. What's the status on this? We can actually link to their database to retrieve the status and then use AI to generate a reply that tells both our customer and the vendor what the status is and when they can expect this payment. And that's basically what the generate response feature does. So it kind of ties in the data we have available and our expertise about accounts payable to help with these queries and relieve workload that way.
Yeah. Okay. I think this is why I was equating it to kind of customer service, even though in this case, you're dealing with suppliers and vendors, not necessarily customers. But there's this pattern of an email comes in order to respond to that email, there's data locked in other systems that you need to go. If I was a human responding to that email, I got to go look up information about the invoice. I got to figure out where it's at in our process. Then I got to reply to the customer. And so in this case, the AI tool is doing some of that retrieval, even drafting a reply, and just trying to help with, I've got 1,000 emails to reply to. How do we speed this up?
Another facet of this automation is like quite cool as well. I think we also have this goal of making a lot more processes touchless. So for instance, a really good example would be a vendor would send a statement asking for our accounts payable team to reconcile it. So what we would do on behalf of the accounts payable team, we would kickstart that reconciliation process. We would do the entire reconciliation, and all the user needs to do is just click on the done reconciliation and just send the results to the vendor. So we're also trying to automate stuff in that direction as well.
Yeah, that's a workflow I'm not familiar with. Maybe walk me through, like, before your product, what? Tell me about this reconciliation request and what would the accounts payable person have to do to respond to that?
Yeah, before help desk, our users would receive these statement requests from vendors into their inbox. And obviously their inbox is not integrated yet. So they would have to go, for instance, on Outlook and then see, oh, I've received the statement. So they would download that statement. They would have to manually upload it to the statements module on Zelix. And in the statements module, like on the page where they're uploading the statement, they would have to enter all of the relevant details from the statement. And then after it's processed and we've matched the invoices with the statement details, we would allow the customer to share those results. So basically, this help desk automation cuts that process of downloading the statement, uploading it manually, and it literally just streamlines it from receiving the email with the statement to clicking on the statement and seeing the results all done.
So let's think back to the beginning of the help desk agent. How did you start to prototype? Like, how did you get a sense for this is an area where AI can help?
So one very interesting fact about help desk is it was the first project in Zelix to use something called Carpaccio. So Carpaccio is a developmental methodology for software development to basically, which has the philosophy of daily slices. So a daily slice is basically a goal, a daily goal for a developer to do some sort of task, which contributes to the overall feature that you want to release. If let's say we're working on help desk, maybe the first slice would be to, I need to see like emails from the email client on our system. So having that as a piece of work and then slicing that into logical steps. For that, I would probably need to figure out how to authenticate the email client with help desk. Another thing would be I would need to figure out how to retrieve the emails from the email client to help desk, how to store them, how to analyze them, and so on. So we use this methodology, and the strength for this methodology is that it helps you iterate very rapidly. So because each slice is like a production-ready code that you can see in a production environment, that means that for PMs and developers alike, it's really handy to get the feedback straight away on how something is performing. And I think another kind of way we try to get more feedback from users, we actually released a beta version of a help desk as part of the statements module. So as discussed before, the statements module is like quite popular within Zelix. It has a good user base. So we released the kind of beta version of the product as part of that. And we received a lot of feedback from users that way. They were very quick to say what they loved and what they didn't love so much.
Okay, I want to make sure I understand. So to start off development, you followed this process where the goal was to ship production quality code every single day.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive. I like that. It's like Kanban, but on fire. So give me a sense for, are you actually putting it, like you talked about releasing it like in beta on your statements product. I'm assuming you didn't do that on day one. If all you completed on day one was we can authenticate with email, that I'm guessing that's not something you're putting in front of customers. Is that true?
Yeah. So basically with Carpaccio, there's this like thing that you need to release to production every day. But in reality, what it means is that piece of work you did just gives some sort of feedback. It basically validates like your idea. Almost treating like your days of work as a hypothesis. And then the outcome of that, like days of work, is your answer to the hypothesis. So for instance, if my slices, I need to know how to authenticate with an email client, that at the end of the day, if you authenticate, that means you figured out the way. So it's not just about showing everything to the user from day one. It's more about quickly building on top of each piece and then showing relevant pieces to users when we are ready.
Yep. Okay. I like this. So one of the challenges, this has been a theme that's come up a lot on the podcast, is when you start, like, you have this vision for a help desk agent. Like, it could have a big footprint. Like you said, you're getting 1,000 emails in a day. I'm guessing those emails cover a wide range of questions and use cases. So tell me a little bit about, how did you even deconstruct this? Did you focus on one use case over others? Did you think about, like, from day one, we have to be able to reply to everything? How did you think about how to scope this to start?
With Help Desk, we really started off by imagining a world where we could respond to all the queries that might land in an accounts payable mailbox automatically. That would represent a huge time save for these teams. It would unlock a huge amount of productivity for them. But obviously that is not realistic. So what we started doing, and this was almost 2 years ago now, was very just manually tagging these emails. We had big sets of emails from our customers, and we would just manually go through them, read every request, and tag them. And this gave us sets of data to work with. So we understood roughly that 20% of a mailbox is this kind of request and that kind of request and so on. And this did differ by industry or what the organization might have specialized in, but it did give us a rough estimate as to the types of questions that were coming in. These questions are like, what's the status of my payment? Or why haven't I been paid the correct amount I billed? That sort of thing. And it does represent something that can be easily automated. So this is really where we started off with. And then we filter that even further by looking at what requests might take the most amount of time to respond to. So if you look at the request, what's the status of my invoice? I have to, as a person, look at that, identify who the vendor or supplier that's communicating with me is, jump to the various systems that I might have that have this invoice, get the correct invoice, find it, identify what the status is of it. And then I might need to chase that internally before getting back to the vendor. So that's really the query that we started with before expanding. And I think where we saw the most productivity gains.
I love this idea that you started with actual data. I'm curious about how you got access to it. So did you reach out to some customers? Did they like opt into this? Is this something your company already has permission to look at? I know a lot of teams struggle with, how do I even look at data in the first place?
Yeah, that's a great question. Because we're conducting a lot of these discovery calls and so on, I think, Teresa, something that you might be very familiar with is you build a very close relationship with the customers that you have and so on, and they become very willing to work with you. So once you identify what the issue might be, they'll start sending you these emails themselves and so on. Zelix as well has a component within the statements module that allowed us access to some emails. So the customers that were willing to work with us, we didn't have to set up some other type of integration. We could just use that access to then start manually tagging these emails ourselves.
Okay, so it sounds like you had some customers that were almost like design partners. They were excited about where you were exploring. Yeah. They wanted to work with you on this. They were like, you already have access to some of our data. Feel free to work with that. And then who did this tagging process?
Me. It took a lot of time. It took a very long amount, but I became very good at just reading the header of an email and knowing exactly what it was about. I did have support, so other people were tagging with me as well. And it did build a lot of empathy with the customer or these accounts payable teams, because if you could think that it would take us maybe a whole day to tag 250 or so emails, just imagine if you were actually had to respond to 1,000 or so emails that came in. And so, yeah, it made us very familiar with the problem. It made us very familiar with the volume of emails that came in. And I think it was like a fantastic way to start.
I actually love that you did it manually for so many reasons. I feel like just from understanding your customer standpoint and building empathy, like you said, for your customer, this is amazing. But I also think that there is a little bit of this blank page problem with wide AI products, right? Like, we have to be able to respond to any email that comes in. Like, how do we build an AI product that can have that breadth? And you had a treasure trove of data that could inform that. Like, we have real emails that reflect the needs of what our accounts payables teams have to respond to. And it's almost like you were able to start with a really strong data set that you didn't, wasn't just a guess of what you were going to see in production, but was actually like a real slice of what you might see in production. That's amazing. Okay, so you've got this data set. You've got a sense for what are the most common types of emails that come through. It sounds like a second filter was what takes a lot of time for an accounts payable person to respond to. Tell me a little bit about how you thought through feasibility. Like, how did you determine which types of emails you could automate or which types of emails the agent would be good at responding to?
Yeah, so that's a really interesting question as well. So like Talal described before, of the process of having to go to an external database and verifying information outside of the mailbox, so you need different context, we found that to be quite a laborious process for the user. But more importantly, it was a place where we could leverage something that we had that a general like wide berth does it all AI might not have, which is having access to our customers' financial data. So when we had this initial discussions, it was about what costs users the most time, what are the patterns we see that we could potentially automate, and then where could we leverage like our kind of, you know, unique selling point, so to say. So yeah, we settled on a specific category of emails that were to do with these reminder requests. So we called them reminder or invoice emails. And they're either about submissions of invoices, resubmissions of invoices, reminders about outstanding payments or invoices, or just like one-off requests. They're just like, I sent this one invoice like 2 months ago. And it might just say a number. And they're like, what's happening? So basically, we started off with this kind of narrow problem. So we decided to not go for does it all AI, try to respond to every query. We went very narrow initially. And we actually also broke it up in several separate steps. A response pipeline has many steps that feed, like before we're actually able to write a response, we do very many other tasks before that help us build confidence in what we're actually going to say. Yeah, so that's how we decided on that use case.
Yeah, I love this. And I definitely want to get into what that pipeline looks like. But before we do that, one thing I'm seeing emerge as a theme is that like when you're building an AI product, it's really easy to think, like you have this vision of we're going to respond to all emails and this is going to be amazing. But I love that you actually picked one very specific use case to start with, because I think this is a theme that's emerging around. If you want your AI product to be good, you have to constrain it until you figure it out and then you can grow your footprint from there. I imagine for your product in particular, there was a UX concern about, were these emails going to a shared inbox? Were they going to a shared inbox in your product already? Was there a change that your customers had to adopt to be able to start using this help desk agent?
Yeah, to land on the correct UX path or the correct product path, like many products, we made the wrong decisions first. When a lot of these customers that would be migrating over to help desk were using traditional mail clients like Outlook and so on. And those that were using ticketing systems usually had a base of Outlook or an integrated one that they were using. So what we try to do, and knowing the persona that we usually work with, is we try to build a system that looked a lot like Outlook, that a person could stop using their mail client one day and log on to help desk the next and pick up where they left off. And this would really help cut down on onboarding, training requirements, and that sort of thing. And at the beginning, it did work quite well. People jumped on. They really enjoyed the familiarity of it. But it did present a number of problems down the line. So first off, people were then spot the difference between our platform and a mail client. And it would take us some time to reach feature parity with these. The next was a lot of these problematic behaviors that users might have had in a system like Outlook. So think losing emails in folders and losing track of emails and that sort of thing were then brought over to our system and really discouraging them from utilizing a lot of the ticketing and AI-enabled tools that we had. We pivoted. We kept our inbox view or our traditional view, and we moved on to design a display that really highlighted a lot of these ticket fields and AI-enabled features that then encouraged adoption of them. We still have these two displays today. And what we find is usually when a new customer comes on, they land on the inbox field and the inbox display first and use that. But then as they start getting familiar with our system, the different types of AI features and so on, they do migrate over to the more robust display.
Yeah, interesting. I love that the impetus behind this was how do we make onboarding as easy as possible? How do we facilitate this change? And I can imagine this is a big change. We're all used to working out of our own inboxes. I know when I first started using a help desk software for my customer service, I was like, wait, I have to go check another place. And so there's a little bit of this hurdle. So I love that you tried to address that with just something really familiar. I'm also intrigued by, I'm not surprised to learn that what came with that was all the problems that come with email. And so you started to look at, okay, what's the right interface given that we're adding all this new AI functionality? Help me picture this a little bit. So what do I get? I can picture the inbox interface because I'm familiar with Outlook and how email works. What's the difference in the interface that you pivoted to? What are some of the things you mentioned you're exposing more of sort of the support ticket functionality, but give me a sense of what are some of that AI functionality you're exposing that second interface encourages more usage of?
So you're correct. The traditional inbox looks a lot like how Outlook might look, layered with some ticketing fields and generative AI. What we moved on to was a view that really brought tickets to the forefront. So really moved away from emails, folders, and so on, and just was a list of all your tickets in the mailbox, no matter where they existed, and highlighted all the fields. When a ticket gets created on our system, we run through a series of analysis steps to categorize it, to identify who the vendor might be, who if it's internal or external to your organization, and so on. So we're highlighting all these fields to you, bringing them to the forefront, allowing you to filter and quickly sort by them as well. And then the navigation allows you to jump in and respond to a message very quickly. A lot of these fields as well will highlight which tickets might have a generated response ready for it or ones that you've already responded to. There are things that we already also brought over from a traditional inbox view. So read and unread statuses, for example, is something that we copied over. So what we really did was we looked at what was working in an inbox and what was missing from it at the ticket level and really brought those two things together.
Okay, I love already some of the things that you've said. So it sounds like there's a lot of data enrichment. A ticket comes in, you're augmenting it with what you know about it. And then you also indicate if there's been a generated response. So it sounds like your help desk agent is, there's still a human in the loop. It's not sending emails or closing tickets. It's just facilitating the accounts payable person to respond. Is that correct?
Yeah. So we're not 100% there yet in terms of responding automatically, but we are very close. So what we do now is we pre-generate a response when it is ready. So users do not have to wait the 12 or so seconds it takes to generate a response. They just jump into a ticket, see the query they got from the vendor, and then the generated response is there and ready for them. And then with the generated response, we have a confidence measure that we associate to it that allows the user to see how confident we are in that response. And there's different parameters that go into making up that confidence measure. And then the user can decide whether they actually need to review the response, edit it, or if they're happy to send it off.
Amazing. Okay, so let's get into what this looks like under the hood. Let's talk through kind of pipeline architecture. A support ticket comes in. What happens next?
So we have built an internal pipeline that we call the email processing pipeline. So once an email arrives into our product, we start off a series of tasks. And some of these are parallel, some of these are sequential, so they depend on what we find out about the ticket. But let's say a support ticket comes in. One of the first things we'll do is we'll basically pre-process that email. So we'll look at, does it have attachments? Who sent it? What's in the email itself? We'll then classify that into categories that we have that are relevant for accounts payable. So like reminder, invoice, statements, and so on. And then we'll try to, then we'll run a whole lot of other steps. But some of the steps we do is like we try to find out who the vendor was. So if it's from a domain that we know, then we might be able to just use that. Else we can use the document information or the email text itself. And once we categorize this as a category that we want to generate a response for so that we can automate the workflow for, we then send it to a separate path to basically generate all this data, look up what we need to do, and then synthesize all that information at the end with an LLM to report back to the user.
Claire obviously went through the email pipeline, but then, so basically a ticket on help desk corresponds to an email thread. So we do a bunch of other analysis on top of that to fill out the relevant ticket fields from individual emails, because it's quite challenging though, because obviously each email can potentially have like a separate piece of information. So what we try to do is keep like the overall theme of information within the ticket and try to show that and summarize a lot of that for the user.
Ah, I love this because I can imagine you get like little bits of information over the course of the email thread and you're like trying to build up a model of what do we know and what do we still need to know and how does this help support the response? Okay, so let me make sure I understand correctly. So let's start with the first email on a ticket. So the very first time you get a request on a ticket, it sounds like there's some kind of like data enrichment steps of who is this from? And it sounds like even that might be tricky, maybe from the email address, maybe from the attached file, maybe you know from the text in the email. But there's first this like, who is this even from? Do we associate it with a supplier or a vendor in our system? Then there's a step around, is this a can we categorize the request? And is it a request that we have a pipeline for? And if so, we set it off to that. If not, does it just go in your support, in your ticketing system, and a person replies to it?
We do generate responses only for invoices and reminders. So any type of other queries, we do provide like extra information, for example, for statement emails or bank detail emails or stuff like that. But we don't like reply for the user. We don't generate the reply necessarily. So even though we don't have like that automation of generating a response, we still have certain, we've still cut down the work that the user would have to do otherwise to click around the platform, check, oh, is this vendor exists? What are their details? And so on.
So it sounds like you're doing this like data enrichment on all tickets. And then yeah, some tickets have actions that you can further automate or further augment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Tell me a little bit, I think, Claire, the way that you described it, that initial like data enrichment of who is this from, sounds like even that is a little bit tricky. What are some of the things that come up there?
Oh, yeah, that's really tricky. So I think it depends on like the email. So it is a bit of a case-by-case basis how easy this is. And that's why we actually, so we use these three data sources, like the email domain and the text of the email and attachments in a kind of like almost hierarchical way to like determine what is our, which source we think is most credible, which one can we rely on the most to tell us who this is from. But there's still loads of cases where it's just not that easy to find out. So there are shared domains, for example. So sometimes there are specific domains that send out a different request across users even. And also because we have vendor data available. So our customers also have this kind of vendor information inside Zelix. We call it master vendor data. We basically can match vendors to that data, and that matches to our invoices. So that means that the data is structured and basically reliable. But to find out, let's say you just get an email and it's from a domain you don't, like, you can't map to. It says somewhere on the attachment, like, the name of the vendor. And in your master vendor data, that vendor might be named differently. So it might be an LLC, but on the attachment, it doesn't say LLC, for example. It could be as simple as that. Or it could be a subsidiary, or sometimes there's just been a rename of a vendor. Yeah. So it just, that is actually one of the trickiest problems that we have, is matching to the right vendor. And not just for help desk, also for statements.
This is particularly important because you're dealing with finance data. Like, you don't want to be replying to an unknown person about somebody's invoice if you can't associate them with that vendor. Is that true?
So the generate response feature depends on a vendor as well. So if we cannot find out the vendor, then we might not be able to find the invoice information. And if we can't do that, then we will not generate a response either. We do have some fail saves there. Like, we wouldn't be just sending out something to a random person or email. But yeah, so we do have this additional fallback if the vendor isn't clear. We're not sure which vendor it is, because oftentimes we have candidates. So we think it's like a list from a list of vendors, but we're not sure which one it is. Sometimes the invoice information can tell us which one it is. So if we have 10 invoices and they all match to one vendor that we also think is a potential like match, then we could put that one forward. But yeah, it can get quite tricky, and it's something that we're continuously iterating on and trying to improve. It works well in a lot of cases. It's just sometimes very tricky.
Yeah, it's funny. This seems like such a simple problem, but I can think about it even from my own experience of, like, I invoice companies. There was a time period where I used a firm to do my invoices for me. They had a different domain name than my company domain name. Right. So the invoice would be coming from one domain, but the PDF of the invoice has a different company name on it. Now, ideally, you know, like, when I go through vendor setup, like, my company name on the vendor setup matches the name on the invoice. And then that firm was listed as the accounts payable contact. And so, like, in an ideal world, they're connected somewhere in your system. But I can imagine, like, this doesn't always go perfectly. And there's just times where you're like, Susan is emailing me about this company, but she doesn't have an email address from this company. And is it really the same? Is it the right thing? Is that kind of what happens here?
Yeah. Sometimes we just don't know who the vendor is. And if we just don't have enough sources to go on, we don't have enough information, then we'll just leave. We'll just won't make a vendor suggestion. So we'll say, we don't know. Yeah.
And so it sounds like this process is happening on every ticket. You're just trying to augment it with, who is this from? Can we connect it to a vendor in our vendor system? Maybe even, are you also trying to connect it, like, to an invoice or to a statement based on the content of the email?
Okay,
so it sounds like there's this just data enrichment step. What can I deduce from the original message? And then I'm going to try to bring in related resources, whether it's vendors or statements or invoices, so that if a human is responding, they have access to all the information they might need. And then, Amelia, I want to go back to something you said. Over the course of a ticket, there might be some back and forth emails, and that's adding new information to the conversation. Tell me a little bit about how does that come into play, and how does the system handle that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I guess the main way we still do depend on Outlook, because our main integration is with Outlook on help desk, is the fact that we thread the emails the same. We tend to try to thread the emails the same way that they would be threaded on Outlook. So basically, whenever an email is received or sent from help desk, we would resync our help desk inbox with our customer's Outlook inbox. So basically, you have this concept of eventual consistency, that it should match on both platforms eventually. In terms of how we map that, it is quite complicated, because we do need to analyze the email first and then try to find the correct ticket to map that, like the correct thread to map that to, and then the correct ticket to map that to. because we also have a concept of a closed ticket. One email thread might have several different tickets. And this is mostly done for cases, for example, when you receive an email from a vendor, you reply to the vendor and you resolve that query and you put your you mark your ticket as completed. But then after a month or two, for some reason, the vendor replies to the same thread. So obviously, you probably don't want to reopen the same ticket. It's likely a different query, it's a month apart. So that becomes a lot more complicated. What emails do you show on which ticket? How do you handle that information that you display on the ticket level? And yeah, it's a lot of considerations in that bit.
In one of our courses, we use email as a case study of like, how do we solve problems with email? And one of the biggest like opportunities that always arises is like a colleague starts a new conversation on an old email thread, and then it makes that email thread impossible to find. It sounds like this is the support ticket equivalent of that, of like somebody's starting a new support issue on a really old support ticket. And then you have to be smart about, we actually need to fork this into its own support ticket because it has its own context that we need to enrich it with.
Yeah. And I think working on help desk, when you sometimes think, oh, like, surely this doesn't happen, surely people don't do this, it always happens. There's always at least one case. Yeah. So you can't really make that assumption.
Okay. And then I want to get back to, okay, so if we're looking at like our architecture map, we've got a support ticket that comes in. The first step is this enrichment piece. There's definitely some tricky parts of who is this email even from? What's it about? How do we pull in the right vendor invoice statement, whatever might be related. And then it sounds like if it is categorized as an invoice email or an invoice reminder, it then goes to this pipeline that can generate a response. Tell me a little bit about that generate response pipeline.
Yeah, sure. So I see the generate response feature is like the cherry on top of this like pipeline we have. So it's very dependent on like how you called it, the data enrichment steps. So we run several AI tasks that basically enrich this ticket. So I think one of the most useful things we do before we even generate the response is showing customers on this side panel that we have what the invoices mentioned in the email thread are and what their statuses are, who they were from, so which vendor, if we were able to match all that. And what we can also do now is we can show differences. So if there's an incomplete match, like the amount isn't completely the same or the date isn't completely the same, but it is, we believe that this is the best match, then we will put that forward still with a warning. So all these invoice matches also show confidence and how, well, status, basically, how well we've matched it. So once we've done that step, so that's a combination of large language models, machine learning models, and just some algorithms. After we've got that information data, we've matched it, then we can then synthesize that information in a response. So the response is basically another LLM that it's like a context augmented LLM is what I like to call it. So it's not exactly an agent, like it cannot take, like it doesn't decide what to do. We tell it what it has to do with the data that we give it, and all the data we give it has been separately like validated and produced by other processes. And like you were mentioning before, because we're working with financial data, a really big requirement we have is accuracy. So we want to make sure that we produce reliable, consistent results that are as accurate as we can get them. So that's why we break up these steps and make them as narrow as possible. So the final generate response task is just an LLM that tries to basically formulate the information in the best way possible. Yeah.
So it sounds like a lot of the pipeline is like a lot of your challenge is retrieval and making sure that you're retrieving the right sort of documents, whatever a document is in this instance, so that by the end, you can give that final LLM step the context it needs to really generate the right response, which if I think about this, it feels a lot like what the human is doing. Like they get the support ticket and they're like, I got to go dig up all the right context so I can write a response. Is that a fair way to look at it?
Yeah, I think that's very fair. And I think that's how Chalal described it as well. It's like we're trying to basically replicate the user steps and the user journey and the tasks that they would do to complete this ticket. And I think it is the best approach to do because you need to go through these steps to be able to produce that result. So it's quite a sequential process. Like, you need to look it up, you need to know what the status is, and then you need to summarize that for your vendor who's asking you where their payment is. Yeah.
Yeah, and you hit the nail on the head there, Teresa, with what a human does, because that is the process that we fall back on quite often. In, for example, in not being able to identify who the vendor is based on an email domain or language in the email, how might a human do it? We would open up the attachment and see a logo, and then we would associate that logo with a vendor. So how can we then translate that into a process that we can have in our pipeline to identify who a vendor is? And that is something that we build throughout our process as well.
Yeah. So it sounds like in your system, like, the hardest pieces are around, like, just data enrichment. How do I go retrieve the right content to know even what the right response to this ticket is? Is that fair? Do you feel like that's where the harder steps are?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So tell me a little bit about, how are you evaluating those steps? How do you know if they're good enough? How do you know if you're finding the right stuff? I've heard a little bit about confidence scores. I'd love to hear how those get calculated. Tell me a little bit about, how do you evaluate your retrieval steps?
Yeah, so the confidence measure that we display on our responses is basically a combination of the task that came before it and also how complicated the email thread is. So, like Amelia was saying, like, we can have, all tickets are based on an email thread. We can have multiple tickets per email thread. There could be multiple invoices mentioned in an email thread, multiple documents. So someone could send a statement and then two invoices, and then 2 weeks later, two more invoices or something, or hundreds. They could send 100 invoices. Sometimes those things happen. So basically, when we look at we look at two specific things for retrieval. So one is, how well did we, for example, extract the invoice information from the email? So how good are the sources we have to go on? So that's very much about what came into the email. Was it just a random person asking, where's my invoice 123 with no other information? Or did they send, like, a PDF and there's a vendor and there's an amount and there's a date and any other information that helps us find the right invoice in our system? So we put quality and, like, confidence measures on those. Then we have this kind of retrieval step. So how you call it, the retrieval, we usually call it matching. So it's like finding the right record. Either way works. So we basically use machine learning models there to do this matching. So those models produce basically a probability. So how confident are we about these matches? And we then also assess, given the entire context of what we know about the ticket, what we know about the vendor, what the best matches are, how confident are we that we've matched everything very well? So there's a few different, like, metrics that go into this. And that then ultimately builds for that confidence for the final generated response. So when we produce that final synthesized information, given all these sources, how confident are we that we have all the information we need to handle this ticket? Yeah. So we're still continuously also improving this feature because it's tricky. And yeah, I think especially with evaluating the LLM, like, there's still more we can do. So yeah, we're trying to basically not just looking historically, like, at the data, at the tickets, but also, like, at the LLM, how happy are the customers, but how we're phrasing things, how well have we, like, captured their way of responding, these kinds of measures that we're looking at now as well.
So if I understand right, it sounds like there's this first step of, like, maybe based on the email, can I construct, like, maybe a data model of who I think the vendor is and what invoice I think they're talking about? And then there's this machine learning matching between what you constructed from the email with known things in your system. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. I could imagine, like, if that first step, like, what can I extract from this email, is really good. Like, a good feedback loop is, we found a thing in our system that matches it exactly. And then so that's already a feedback loop. If we didn't find something, it could be we extracted things wrong from the email, but it also could just be the customer's asking about something that doesn't exist.
Yeah. So there's this, I think there's a difference between, did we Were we not able to match it? Because if we're not able to match it, that is fine. Like, we can say to the customer, either, usually it's either scenario of that invoice doesn't actually exist on the system, or it is presented in such a different like format that we just cannot confidently match it. And then we'll basically flag to the customer that they need to check out this invoice because we're not able to match it. Yeah, so we have that kind of fallback mechanism where we basically have this like status that we show when we're not able to find a good match. Yeah, which I think is quite useful as well.
And then it seems like there is, at the end, like you're showing a generated response to an accounts payable person, and they're deciding whether or not to send that to the customer. Are you able to collect analytics there about how often your generated responses are getting sent, or do they need to be edited, or do they just get thrown out? Is that a good feedback loop as well?
Yeah, definitely. So we have an internal dashboard that we use at Zelix, which we use to monitor the performance and user behavior of our products. And we're building out now a more comprehensive view of generate response usage and basically how often it's being used. So we monitor this. So in the AI engineering team, we monitor this ourselves, but the internal dashboard allows us to share it with product and with backend and customer success, for example, like more easily. So yeah, we track basically how often are they being used, which customers are using them. And we can also see how different the responses that they sent ended up being. So even if they used the response, did they, for example, change everything about it? Or did they like send the exact same thing that we produced? Yeah, so that's where we're looking at that, and that gives us more insight into how the customers, what features they actually like about this response and what might not be working. Yeah. And that gives us more to talk to them about as well, because then we can ask them like, why do you change these responses so much or not at all? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, great. Anything else about help desk that you want to share that I haven't asked about?
Claire's answer to how are we evaluating whether what we're doing is correct or good. A lot of her focus was on like coverage and confidence and utilization of our AI features. But what was also important to us is if help desk is the default workspace for our users and the stickiness of it compared to them moving on to something, moving back to a mail client like Outlook or even just responding to an email on their phone. So what we try to do is we measure the messages that are coming out of help desk versus the messages that are not coming out of help desk and are being produced on another platform. Mm-hmm. That is a key measure for us. Another is a lot of ticketing metrics that might be important to teams or customers for their own performance as they use help desk are also important to us. So we really want to know how many tickets have been responded to. Are there any tickets that are stalled? What's the average handling time for tickets? And is this trending downwards as customers are picking up or adopting a lot of our AI features? These things are really important to us because it really demonstrates how well the platform is doing as a whole and how well some of these AI features that we're delivering, the impact it might be having on tickets.
Yeah, I could see a really great measure being for tickets that had a generated response, where they closed faster versus tickets that don't have a generated response.
Right. Another thing that we measure is like tickets that were just automatically closed. We focus quite a bit on generated responses, but sometimes you might get a ticket that lands on your mailbox. And because of our augmentation, where we identify who the vendor is and the category and so on, the customer might decide, that's not the type of message I care about. I might not want to respond to that. These types of tickets, I would consider spam. So we do allow them to build rules where these are automatically resolved. So that's another metric we track. Like, what's the percentage of tickets you'd never even had to open? And yeah.
Yeah, I like that category. We have a customer support system and we get a lot of spam. So I definitely, that one resonates with me a lot. All right. Anything else you want to share about help desk and where you're headed?
This week and this quarter, we want to look into more of, I guess, bringing more of an agentic flow to generate responses. As I was saying before, we have quite a dedicated, very narrow and vertical pipeline right now to deal with a specific category of emails as well as we can. What we want to do is also how Amelia has been alluding to like custom categories and similarity of emails and tickets, is we want to try and pick up more of these emails that we can generate responses for. And we also want to be smarter about how we do this. So not all reminder and invoice emails are created equal. So some are emails that our customers just don't care about. So like Salal said, they might never even open a ticket and they might not care about something. They might not need to respond. And currently we are investing time, resources to run this pipeline, generate responses for them. So we want to be more targeted about knowing what our customers want to reply to and what they don't want to reply to. So I think for me, those two things about being more targeted about actually giving the users what they need and expanding to something that's more agentic and allows us to more flexibly respond to different categories of emails. Probably still keeping that vertical approach. So we're probably going to build multiple particular responders, but that's what I'll be looking into next.
Yeah, I can imagine growth just in terms of building out more different generate response pipelines. And then I imagine with the agentic piece, letting an agent decide based on the content of the email, what's the right pipeline to shuffle it off to? Is that how you're thinking about it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, great. That's very exciting. Amelia or Talal, anything else you want to add?
Sure. I guess from a tech lead point of view, we are at a very exciting time within Zolix at the moment. Both our product is growing like so much. We're developing so many new features. We're introducing new functionality every single day. And then that's also, that fuels the fact that our company is expanding, like our development team is expanding quite a bit. So I think at the moment within the development team, we're really trying to focus on how to make this Carpaccio process work for us and work with stability. Some of the trade-offs sometimes with Carpaccio can be, how do you make sure that what you're pushing out to production is quality code? How can you make sure that the correct people are seeing the correct things and the correct things are behind the future flag and they're released in a correct way? So we are really focusing our attention towards building those good practices and releasing in a reliable way and investing more in the stability of our platform.
Yeah, it sounds like it's a fun time period. I know for a lot of people, we've almost had a reawakening for software companies of, it's fun to build again. We're not just building the same sort of SaaS patterns, but there's all this new technology to embrace. And this is the theme that's coming up of people are just really excited to build again.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like with the rise of AI tools and the bytecoding and that kind of thing, I feel like it enables you to go a lot further than you would have even a couple of years ago.
Yeah, and it brings more people into the process, right? Because we have folks that maybe didn't have the hardcore technical skills that can still be involved in like just a V0, which is really fun.
Which our designers actually use quite heavily as well.
The product V0?
Yeah.
That's great. All right, this has been really great. Thank you, all three of you, for sharing your story with me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
No problem. Thank you.
If you enjoyed this conversation, please subscribe in your favorite podcast app and give us a rating as it helps others find the show. Thanks. I appreciate it.